This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yet another edition of the Sellers Points podcast. I am, of course, your illustrious host, Russell Sellers. And with me, as always, the ever smooth and always ginger, Mr. Kelly Poole. How you doing today, sir?
I'm good.
He's tired today, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a long week, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a pretty long week for me, so I'm a little tired, but I'm here.
Hey, he is a real trooper, folks, and we always appreciate. I always appreciate that you're here anyway, Kelly, and I think the people do too. They love hearing that that smooth ginger bear-y white voice. But with that, folks, it's the start of a new month. We're sorry for running a little late, but like we said, it's been a hell of a week, and We're finally getting around to recording this thing and getting it out there to you on a lovely Friday afternoon for us anyway. So who knows when you'll be listening to this. But in any case, it's the start of November, Kelly. And like we promised the folks last episode, it's time for another top and bottom five two-parter. Yep. And this time, unlike our last top five where we talked about the best in live-action comic book TV shows, this time we're going to be giving you the top and bottom five animated comic book TV shows. So, you know, as the great Sam Jackson once said, hold on to your butts. Because is it going to get controversial this time? It might. It just might. But you know what? I think when it comes to these top five, I think there are going to be a lot of people that agree with mine and Kelly's assessment. But we're not to that yet, because as we always do, the start of the show, the first half is dedicated to talking to you guys about some of the highlights, both good and bad, from what we read over the last 2 weeks. So without further ado, let's get into talking some comics, talking some shop, and we always start with the usual, the wonderful, the aptly named DC Rebirth Rapport. So, Kelly, I want to start with you, man. What from DC Rebirth jumped out at you over the last 2 weeks?
Well, I want to definitely Earth 2 Society is picking up for me. I really enjoyed the Fate of Earth 2 Part 1.
Which issue was that?
That was 17.
17, cool.
Yeah. Things are really starting to pick up for the book, and I'm just enjoying it again like I used to. So it's the characters are all kind of trying to figure out what's going on. They're all kind of separated at first, and then they kind of have to come across each other, and it's just good. This is one of those books that, I mean, I've always been a fan since they started this way back, and the Justice Society itself has always been I've always kind of enjoyed the Justice Society just a little bit more than the Justice League. Maybe it's the older versions and the somewhat B and C listers that kind of float around in that illustrious group.
I was just going to theorize that it's because you're old.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, that has probably a lot to do with it. And the other book that really stood out was Green Lanterns. These last two issues, 9 and 10, dealing with the Phantom Ring.
Well, we haven't got the 10. 10 came out, I think, this week, but you were right about it.
Eight and 9 are just on point. I mean, they, you know, they're the whole thing, this okay, when I first started realizing or noticing that, okay, well, they're coming up with yet another ring, I was kind of like, oh, okay, well, you know, rings are kind of getting crowded. But when I realized that this ring didn't have anybody could pick it up and wear it and use it, I went, oh, well, that just changes everything. That, you know, I went from kind of going, really? What's it going to be on this one? What's the Phantom Ring going to be? What's going to power it? And then, you know, you read a little bit more and you find out, oh, well, you know, the thing about this ring is anybody can pick it up and use it. There's no, you don't have to have any, you know, extraordinary will or whatever. And I just thought, oh my God, that makes this probably one of the most dangerous weapons in the universe. You know, to an extent, it's kind of like you have the Infinity Gauntlet in ring form to an extent. And
access to the entire emotional spectrum immediately. And there's no, like, I mean, White Lantern, Kyle Rayner, eat your heart out. This dude's got all your powers and he didn't have to.
He didn't have to go through the trudge and trials that he did.
Exactly. Like it was a very cool issue. Like I really loved 9. It was one of my top books for the last week from Sam Humphries and Robson Rocha. Just tremendous stuff there. And I think that if you guys listened to the Hard Traveling Fanboys this past week, you know that Nick also loved this issue with good reason, because it took a concept of an older Green Lantern character and kind of put a new coat of paint on him and made like what was old is new again without really reinventing the wheel. And as to also echo Nick, is very simple, it's a very straightforward story, but it's told really well, and that's what made that issue also work for me. You got any other issues that jump out at you from Rebirth? Anything good or bad?
Well, I haven't really had anything bad, but I mean, everything that I've pretty much read. Yeah. I mean, Titans number 3 is another one of those books that I'm kind of enjoying, because it's definitely, you know, it's. I don't mind the Teen Titans now that we've got with Damian and that core group, but I do enjoy seeing the older Titans together and doing their thing. And you know, the villain Abra, was Kadabra.
Yeah, it's Abra Kadabra.
He's such a goofball, but I mean he's definitely one of those neat villains that definitely it feels like a Titan villain.
He does. A little mustache twirling, but it's just the things he does are really dark, so it's like it's kind of evening itself out. I do wish that the artwork was a little bit better on that book, but the writing is stellar.
Yeah. I pine away for this, and it will never happen, but I would love to see George Perez come back and do Titans, but I think he's past doing a consecutive series.
I think he's done his time. He's given us more than enough. And with that, like speaking of Teen Titans, though, I did want to say that I read Teen Titans number 1 from Ben Percy and John Boy Myers, and wow, tremendous! I absolutely loved Ben Percy's take on Damian. It felt right in line with the Pete Tomasi and Patrick Gleason take on the character from their Batman and Robin run. I loved how they wrote Kid Flash. I thought that they captured a very classical sense of Beast Boy and Raven and Starfire. The idea behind what is, you know, Damian's motivation to bring all these characters together, it's just so well written and beautifully drawn. It feels like a Teen Titans book, finally. You know, after so many years of us just not having a good Teen Titans book, I got to say I was sufficiently impressed. But the one thing that I do want to mention is that Flash number 9 has got to be the most well-written, worst-looking book I've picked up out of Rebirth yet. The writing from Joshua Williamson was just amazing, and the artwork was just god-awful. It's one of those, it's got so many really good emotional beats, great voices for all the characters, but dear God, get a different artist on this. Bring Ken Watanabe back. His one issue on this series so far was the best by far. But that last page reveal, Kelly, you're such a big fan of Justice Society. I think you need to go pick up Flash number 9 and get ready to possibly reach a full body orgasm by that. As disturbing a picture as that might be, folks, just roll with it. It's good.
I'll check it out.
You need to. I think that's going to make you happy. Also want to say shouts to Batman number 9, tremendous start to I Am Suicide, probably best issue of Tom King's run yet. And I would say that same thing. I would say very similar things about Wonder Woman number 9. I hope you got around, Kelly, to reading Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 7.
I did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Massive throwdown between Hal and Sinestro that did not feel like a retread of every fight they've had before. Mm-hmm. It felt fresh. It was just so well done. Killer fight scene between those two. And it's almost an issue long fight scene. Beautiful artwork from Rafa Sandoval. Guy Gardner's lines steal the show again.
Yeah.
But, it reminds you why this conflict between Hal and Sinestro is so pertinent and just so much fun to read. And as I've said it before, but I think it bears repeating, that Deathstroke might actually be the most intelligently written book in all of Rebirth. As I mentioned before, that Ben Percy has a good handle on Damian's voice. So does Christopher Priest. He really wrote a fun, funny, and poignant issue in Deathstroke number 5. So if you guys like your DC books with a little bit more edge, you needs to go get that. It was a great, great issue. Don't sleep on Deathstroke. It is absolutely one of the best books in Rebirth. And one last book that I'll go into any kind of detail on would be Detective Comics 943, the first chapter of the Victim Syndicate. James Tynan IV and Alvaro Martinez they kick this off in a really interesting way. It's a very dialogue-heavy issue, but I was entertained throughout. I thought that the conversation between Bruce and Kate was written incredibly well. Kept the issue moving. I like this new take on Luke Fox too. I think he's going to be an interesting new wrinkle into this story. And the unlike Green Lanterns, where they were putting a new coat of paint on an older character, this is introducing a whole set of new villains. And I got to say, they are intriguing as hell.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're reading this book, Kelly. Are you reading Detective?
I'm starting to pick it back up.
This is going to be, best Bat book on the shelf still to this day. Even though I have really started to love All Star Batman, and I am still a big fan of Nightwing, and Tom King's Batman. Like, all the Bat books are pretty much good, with the exception of Batgirl. The Victim Syndicate Part 1 and Detective 943, go get that. That's a must read, I think. And the last two things I want to say is that if you're a Superman fan like me, you need Superman number 9 and Trinity number 2. Those are one. Superman 9 is a beautiful closing tribute to the late Darwin Cook. I was a huge fan of that guy. I'm still a huge fan of him. And seeing Pete Tomasi and Patrick Gleason, along with Doug Monkey, close out their two-parter Dinosaur Island, or Escape from Dinosaur Island story, it was wonderful. It was very Darwin Cook. If you've ever been a fan of his work, it felt like a story that he would have told. And it continues to have this great father-son dynamic between Clark and John, which I think is the biggest selling point of the book. And Trinity number 2 was also a big father-son dynamic, but between a seemingly time-displaced Superman and Jonathan Kent. Although the big reveal at the end of that issue was a hell of a twist, and I absolutely loved it. So, and like you, Kelly, I didn't really have anything bad out of Rebirth. Like that, nothing really struck me as being terrible. And that's refreshing to be able to say that about all these DC books and to have so many to talk about, because we're always, you know, waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, when is it going to finally turn and things go horribly wrong? But, you know, we're several months into this now, and things are still largely going strong.
Yeah.
But let's move on, as the Will Ferrell Harry Carey would say. And also big shout out to the Chicago Cubs. Congratulations on winning your first World Series in 108 years. That last game was freaking tremendous. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. That's how good postseason baseball can be. Now, if only they could make the actual baseball season that entertaining and exciting. But anyway, moving on to the marvelous moment of the podcast, it's time to talk a little Marvel Comics. Kelly, you got any Marvel books that you picked up this week? Because I don't have very many.
I've got basically the Champions.
I've been curious about that book.
Yeah, Champions is Champions 2 came out this week. Last week, a Champions kind of a retro throwback to the original Champion series that came out in the 70s, which is not a bad, I mean, it's a $7.99 book, but I mean, you get two.
So what you're telling me is Greg won't be buying it.
No, probably not. Mm. But I mean, I think that, I mean, you're getting two good story arcs that span like issues 1 through 4, 1 through 5, and then they've got issues 14 through 16. But just going back and rereading this made me remember back when I picked these books off the shelf back in the day. I mean, the art is definitely, you could look at it and it's definitely dated. But I think it still kind of holds up. It's not anything real harsh on the eyes. And in the latter part, the latter issues, John Byrne took over doing the art for the Champion series. And
so if nothing else, it was beautiful.
It's beautiful. I mean, if you're a fan of his like I am, I mean, his stuff is just great. But going into the current series, I'm really liking the current series. I mean, I think that Marvel's finally got kind of a Teen Titan-ish book, and one that's kind of grounded in, you know, these young heroes wanting to make a difference and wanting to, you know, they see what the elder heroes and stuff, how they've kind of been acting, and it's like, we don't want to do that. We want to be different. We don't want to do all the crap that they're doing, especially like, you know, I'm not a big fan of the Civil War II right now. I hadn't been, but this is real refreshing to see this kind of come out of Marvel. And hopefully, you know, they will continue. With Mark Waid on it, though, I mean, I'm not really surprised too much. The writing is really, really strong, and the art's good, and the lineup is really good. So
that's what you want out of a good team book, and Marvel has been in need of a book that could answer Teen Titans for a little while. Not that Teen Titans has really been providing a lot of competition lately.
No, I mean, the New 52 Titans was abysmal, and yeah. Just a pure wreck the entire time that they tried to, you know, put that book together. So,
and they had Young Avengers back in the day, which I would probably hold up as a strong contender for.
Yeah, it was.
That and Runaways would probably be their strongest statement or Marvel statement of saying, hey, look, we got a book that is everything that Teen Titans should be right now and isn't. Mm-hmm. And if Champions is going to step in and be that book now, I think that's really great. And like you, I'm a fan of the lineup. So when it hits that lovely Marvel Unlimited streaming service, it'll be going on into the reading queue.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, before I get to the book that I actually picked up, brand new book I picked up from Marvel this past week, I do want to give a special shout out to the Jingle Meister himself, the other ginger in my life, Mr. David Sunday, for hooking me up with all those wonderful Old Man Logan codes. That has been just a tremendous read that I am slowly making my way through, and I can't say enough good about that series. It's as someone who read the original Old Man Logan just last year for the first time, and you know, then read all the Old Man Logan stuff through Secret Wars, and now I'm finally able to read this story. It is wonderful, wonderful. I feel really great reading that book. Every issue is just gorgeous with the Andrea Sorrentino art, and Jeff. It's like Jeff Lemire's writing at his very best. It does have, you know, some shades of that Green Arrow run that same creative team had back in a couple of years ago. But man, what a tremendous book! So, David, thank you again for helping me out there and hooking me up with those codes. Also, looking forward to next week when the awesome and awesomely bald Mr. Nick Duke hooks me up with The Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, number one. I'm really looking forward to that book next week. So my Marvel pulls expand. And the book that I picked up in physical copy, actually, yes, I bought this. It's in my hands right now. It's The Mighty Thor, number 12, The Origin of Mjolnir. And it's... This is, like, speaking of people being at their best, I agree with something that Nick said on the Hard Traveling Fanboys a little while back, that Jason Aaron's Thor run is really at its best whenever he's playing in his own world, when he's playing with the concepts that he added to the Thor mythos.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, the Jane Foster Thor is taken by Mjolnir to the, basically it's a giant intergalactic library at the center of existence. If I were to call it anything, and she meets the Lord High Librarian, who I found it to be very entertaining to read him in Michael Caine voice.
Yeah.
So if you're going to pick up Thor, Mighty Thor number 12, and you really want to be entertained, read the High Librarian as Michael Caine. And I promise you, it is an even richer experience than it already was. And I got to give credit also to Fraser Irving, who is a guest artist on the flashback sequences in the issue. He's much better at this than the guy that they had on several issues back, who I just could not find one nice thing to say about it. Like, the art was so bad that I skipped the entire issue and just got to the recap at the end, because the art was just abysmal. It was unreadable. It made the issues unreadable. But Fraser Irving did a fantastic job here. I found his art very entertaining, and the writing was absolutely on point. So I got to say that I'm excited by all this stuff that is happening in Mighty Thor right now. And we'll talk about the issue on the next episode, but Unworthy Thor came out this week, and I was not disappointed. I'll just put it that way. But there will be more on that later. That's all I got for Marvel this week. Kelly, you got anything else?
That's pretty much it for now.
That's perfectly fine. That happens, folks. Sometimes we just don't have a lot of books to go over in some of these companies. But moving on. It's time to imagine that with a look at what we got from Image Comics. Kelly, did you grab any Image books this last couple weeks?
No, I didn't pick anything up. Like I said, the last thing that I read from Image was Reborn number one, which was really good.
Worth repeating, because
Skyborn. I did pick up Skyborn.
That's a Boom Studios book.
Yeah, that's Boom Studios. But that's the only oddities that I picked up.
I got you. On the Image side of things, I talked about Jeff Lemire a minute ago for Old Man Logan. Now I got to give him a little praise for he and Dustin Nguyen's creator-owned book called Descender. Picked up issue 16, which gave us the origin of Driller. And if you've been reading this book continuously, you know that Driller has this tendency to say Driller's a real killer. And he repeats it like a mantra every so often, as a mantra and as a warning. But in this issue, you see the absolutely heartbreaking origin of that statement. And while I've thought for a long time that it was just something they threw into the issue just to kind of make Driller a somewhat badass but very much comic relief, suddenly I really felt for this character. It was like, wow, he has been through some real shit lately, or like just over the course of his apparently long life. But again, this is the conclusion of a story arc, and it's kind of funny that Jeff Lemire does this with Descender, and he's done this with the last two issues, because 15 was also mostly a flashback issue, as is 16. So we're not really moving the main plot forward too much. We're just filling in the histories of a couple of major characters and letting you see who they were before all this, before the machines came along and like seemingly from deep space and pretty much wiped out a good bit of humanity, and why these United Planets are very anti artificial intelligence. I mean, it's a very deep and rich story that I highly recommend you getting. Like, if you haven't started reading Descender yet, I highly recommend getting the trades. Check with your local comic shop. Just get them wherever you can. Just find this book, get on it, start reading it. It is absolutely tremendous stuff. But that's all I got from Image. And you know, we're going to move on out into the wider world of comics and talk about anything else. So, Kelly, you mentioned Skyborn number two. I picked that one up as well. What'd you think of it?
I thought that it was it pretty much ran right on the heels of number one. It was very entertaining. I thought the writing was pretty spot on, and showing us, you know, one of the other Skyborn siblings and bringing him kind of back into the organization. And there's just, you know, there were some funny moments, but this whole magical side of it is what's really kind of neat, and seeing Merlin and him kind of being the bad guy to some extent is kind of an odd but kind of neat concept. But I've been enjoying it. I think it's a good series.
I'm right there with you. This is all Frank Cho as well, with Marcio Menez. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you say that name. But anyway, yeah, this whole second issue focused on Thomas Skyborn, where the last issue focused on Grace, his sister, who seemingly died at the end of the issue.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed Cho's art. I think he's very talented. Love what he's doing on this book. And I had no idea that he could write dialogue this well. And we've talked about before how, you know, some comics are better whenever they're doing a show rather than a tell. Like, it's a visual medium. You know, show us, don't tell us. But this is another one of those issues that we've talked about in recent episodes, that it's actually really great, even though it's so heavily dialogue driven.
Like, yeah,
it's largely two characters or two or three characters sitting around talking to each other, where issue one was like slam bang action from the jump.
Yeah.
But like I said before, if the dialogue is written well and the characters are developed in a way that's compelling and makes you like really attached to them, a whole issue of people sitting around talking can work really great. And this is, I think Skyborn number 2 is a prime example of how you do that. How you just have characters talk to each other, kind of catch each other up on their lives, and you just sit back and enjoy it. And I did. Like, I was right there with you, Kelly. I think that Skyborn, it's a 5-issue miniseries, of course, but it's one of those that I am very happy I didn't decide to wait on the trade for. Because this, like you said, this story is really compelling. I
don't think Grace is dead. For some reason, I think she's going to come back.
I got a sneaking suspicion. I'm like, you know, she was such a good character, such a badass character too in issue one. It seemed like kind of a waste to just like throw her off like that in favor of shifting the story over to Thomas, who is a good character, but quite frankly, Grace had my attention a little bit more. So I'm hoping she comes back. I agree with you. I think that's being teased as a possible thing. So, and I gotta say though, I love that last page.
Oh yeah.
That big splash page, the friggin' dragon and everything.
Yeah.
I was like, Oh wow. Frank Cho flexing, some of those artistic muscles. I mean, everybody wants to talk about how he draws the female figure lately, because that seems to be the only thing anybody wants to mention about him. But when this guy's on, he's really on.
Oh yeah,
he turns it up to 11 and can bring it home. So I was very excited by the artwork and just the surprising amount of humor in the issue.
Mm-hmm.
I still can't understand why they're bleeping out the cursing.
But
they don't have any problem with like gratuitous violence, like gratuitous graphic violence even.
Yeah.
Not so much in this issue. Like, this issue was like almost devoid of any violence. But I got to
so it's a very dialogue driven issue.
It really was, but it was good dialogue, and that's the thing. Like, it. Mm-hmm. If an issue has that good dialogue, it keeps it from getting bogged down. And that's the trick, you know, to writing a dialogue heavy issue. I think that Skyborn number 2 and Detective Comics 943 out of the last couple of weeks are probably two of the best examples of how you write a dialogue heavy issue without making the reader say, "Oh my God, are we ever going to get through this?" Because there are just so many people that fell into that trap. And I'll say that it's funny, though, because James Tynion IV is actually one of those guys who fell into that trap early in his career. But he has gotten so much better at it. He's a tremendous writer. That Scott Snyder protege. But anyway, moving on. One last thing that I picked up that's outside of DC continuity, but I did pick up a special, the Wonder Woman 75th anniversary special. This featured work from people like Rafael Albuquerque, who wrote and drew a story at the very beginning of this, or he co-wrote a story at the beginning of this that was just amazing. Like, I absolutely loved it. It's a it's taking Wonder Woman back to her World War II roots. Great, great stuff. There's art in here from Carl Kerschel, who's one of my top artists. Let's see, there's Riley Rosmo, who people probably know from Constantine, the Hellblazer, or maybe from Night of the Monster Men was a recent work. There's actually little segments from, or a splash page even, that looks like it's straight out of Wonder Woman Earth 1, because it is done by Yannick Paquette. There's some Gail Simone Wonder Woman in here, too. There's an excerpt from Wonder Woman, The True Amazon by Jill Thompson. Just a short bit from that, just like interspersed through here. It's pretty much every type of take on Wonder Woman that you could imagine, from comedy to the more serious, to the straight up superhero, to the compassionate warrior. It's pretty much everything. Like, if you're a Wonder Woman fan, or if you're interested in seeing like some other facets of the character, without spending a whole lot of money, it is a $7.99 book. So I guess that's one more our good friend Greg will not be buying. But for those of you who've got maybe a shorter pull list, you don't have, you know, a lot to pick up, but you're curious about this, I do highly recommend Wonder Woman's 75th Anniversary Special. It is pretty much literally something for everyone within the issue. I even discovered a few things that I wouldn't have otherwise read that I thought were pretty good. So, and with that, that brings us to the end of what we've been reading over the last couple of weeks, or what we picked up at the old shop. Time to move into the other thing that we like to do as nerds, and that's to sit around and watch superhero television. So I know I got all the CW shows from last week. I watched all those episodes, and I know exactly which one stood out for me. But Kelly, what stood out to you? What worked for you in superhero TV last week?
Let's see. Well, I mean, I think the one that kind of stood out the most was Legends of Tomorrow, with their jaunt to feudal Japan, and
that was good.
That was very good. Vixen becomes part of the team officially. She and God, sorry, my mind just kind of went blank. Her and God, feel bad now. Just completely. White Canary.
Yeah. Her and Sarah have
Sarah. Yeah.
Great chemistry.
Yep.
And I'm really liking. Don't get me wrong. I like the actress who played Vixen last season.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is a different Vixen.
Yeah.
But I like this one better.
Yeah. She's comes right in and kind of takes that character on, and even her and Mick, I like the the kind of camaraderie between her and Mick.
Yes,
was interesting.
Who would have thought that we'd be saying that Heatwave is kind of stealing the show?
He's kind of crept in there. I mean, when they first appeared in Flash, I immediately was like, these two guys have got great chemistry. You know, Captain Cold and Mick.
Yeah, they came from
Leonard Snart. Yeah. They've got just a good chemistry.
They do. They actually worked together on a show called Prison Break. on Fox. So that was
that might be why they're kind of still.
That's their sync. That's their history. They're very in sync. Like you said, they're very in sync with each other.
Even though Leonard's not part of the show anymore, and he's not yet.
He'll be back. But
it's definitely, this episode really had a lot of good things going on. The time detective gets his powers, which is interesting. And at the same time, Palmer finally he ends up losing the suit. But we all know that he's going to go back to the drawing board, and he's probably going to build something even more badass. I hope that he does. I mean, he can't really be the Atom without his suit. So
is that he? But I like that they showed that he could be a hero without it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, he definitely. I've always thought Palmer has been kind of like that. I mean, when he first showed up in Arrow, I mean, finally, was just a good choice of actor, and they did a good job bringing him to the small screen.
They really did. I've enjoyed Brandon Routh on that show a lot. I think that he's one of those guys that's making that show, really making it work. But I got to give it up for Sarah Lance, though, because she's kind of everything in that show.
she's definitely kind of taken over kind of the, Captain Hunter's place. She's definitely, a better leader than, say, Dr. Martenstein. I mean, that was really, like, I think, kind of, that and Arrow was another really good episode.
Arrow was strong this past week, although I got to give it up for that fight scene at the end of Legends.
Oh, yeah.
That fight with Sarah and Vixen versus the Samurai. Wow. That was fight scene of the week.
Yeah.
But for me, the best show of the week was The Flash.
Yeah.
That was everything. Just amazing. That episode reminded me why The Flash works best when we've got Cisco and Wells playing off each other.
Yeah.
Because that dynamic is just, I don't want to say that it's the absolute heart of the show, but it is, it's a vital organ nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
That is really helping that show to keep it, I guess, keep it human, keep the humanity in the show by allowing us these two characters who have just not just tremendous chemistry, but a great dynamic. I love that about them. And I thought that they took Mirror Master and did a great version of him that I hope he's got to come back. We need more of him. Need more of that Mirror Master. And they, the way they did the Top, a villain that I would have cared nothing about whatsoever, but the way they wrote her character and presented her was really cool. And I thought I thought the way they did her power set was really interesting. The filming version of that turned out kind of trippy.
Yeah.
But of course, loving the sparks between Jesse Quick and Wally.
Yeah.
I love that. And again, I think we've said it before. I'm going to say it, that the relationship between Barry and Iris is just about perfect.
Yeah.
That they've got it. Like, everything about Flash this past week was just spot on. The effects looked good. The new characters were great. This cast is just firing on all cylinders. Grant Gustin continues to just like really nail it as Barry. It had a kind of an odd start to the season. I wasn't really sure how I was going to feel about it, but man, as we've gone along, Flash season 3 has really started to deliver for me. I am right there with it. And even though I did say that, like, Arrow had me at the beginning, and it's still really great, that show is where, like, Flash is where it's at. And, oh, and we can't forget about Supergirl.
Oh, no, no.
Ooh, this past week's episode was awesome. Like,
yeah.
I was worried that we had spent so much time, you know, introducing Superman on the show and making him into something, that once we removed him and it was going to be Mon-El taking over, that we wouldn't really have enough there to make it work, or that it was going to stumble. That's wrong. It was probably the best episode of the series yet.
Yeah.
And yeah. And there's no Superman to be found.
Mm-hmm.
Loved the introduction of all these different aliens. Bringing Maggie Sawyer into the show was great. Like, yeah. I loved that. Classic Superman character, like, coming over. And of course, Melissa Benoist is just like, Grant Gustin better watch his ass, because she is making a case for the most charming lead character on a TV show.
Yeah.
Period. We didn't have to put up with much James Olsen. He's been punched back down to the mid card, folks. Actually, I think he's in the pre show now.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad that I hope they do something. You know, I know that, is it definite that he's going to become the Guardian? Is that what?
Yeah, that's happening.
I kind of wish they wouldn't go that route. I wish they would do something else with him that would make him stand out and not just try to, you know, throw on a costume and be a superhero. You know, that's, they've got plenty of those in the show already. I mean, I don't, you know what I'm saying? I would love to see him step up and be, not exactly, of course, I don't want it to be like Cat Grant, but be a very strong force there at Catco and kind of, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's fine in that role. Like, just let him stay over there and do that thing, because we don't need another, like you said, we don't need another superhero. We just introduced Ms. Martian.
Yeah, and we have Mon-El, you know, so it's...
Your boy is here.
up until they find out that Daxamites, and I don't know, they may not go this route, but if they end up going with the Daxamite vulnerability to lead, wow, that's going to really and truthfully screw him up, you know.
I mean,
I like the fact that he was a palace guard and that he was, you know, I do like the little backstory they made for him, you know, and that Daxam was kind of a monarchy as opposed to Krypton, that was a democracy or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Right. It all works really well so far, and I felt like Melissa has really great chemistry with the guy who's playing Mon-El. There's a little bit of a spark there, although.
Yeah.
But screw that, because she and Wynn need to make a go of it. That still needs to happen, though. I am digging that they've kind of made Wynn Supergirl's version of Cisco. He's become like, and just like Cisco was for me, I did not like Cisco at the beginning of Flash. I thought he was kind of annoying, and I found Wynn to be equally, maybe even more so, on Supergirl at first. But as it has gone along, he has really grown on me, and now I find him to be like an essential part of the show.
Getting him out of being a tech guy at Catco to working for the DEO and being one of their tech specialists makes a hell of a lot more sense. And it makes it gives him a broader scope as to what he can do. I mean, because really all he did was sat at his desk at Catco, and occasionally they eventually just made a little Supergirl hangout, you know, in one of the offices. And, you know, I'm glad they ditched that and they've got a full fledged, you know, place to go and work out of,
yeah.
You know,
it's
like, you know, everything needs, you need your Star Labs, you need your Arrow Cave. I mean, you know, that little office space that they had was just not cutting it, you know? And I think Wynn is better working where he's at. I mean, it makes sense.
He is. It's a better setup for him. And let's face it, him making quippy remarks that Martian Manhunter can then completely deadpan on is really what's making that work.
Yeah. And even the banter between him and Alex, you know, especially, you know, just.
Oh, absolutely. Like that whole dynamic, like he says something that is actually pretty funny or clever and quippy, and then they just like stare at him like he's the biggest idiot in the world. And I love it.
I think if I have any criticism of any show, it would be Arrow. And the only criticism I have is I'm really fucking tired of them stealing shit from Cord Industries every fucking episode. Well, we had to, you know, we snuck into Cord Industries and we stole some. You know what? I want fucking Ted Cord to show up in the bug and say, stop it.
Stop that right now. Put my tech down. You know, he'd be stealing a line from Tony Stark if he did that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just bullshit that this, you know, if Ted Cord was getting tech stolen, he'd be on that. He'd be like, okay, time to suit up. I'm going to fix somebody.
Okay. You know? Don't you dare be sour.
I'm a little salty right now because it irritates me. It's like, And I know they're not going to introduce Ted Cord. I just know they're not.
You never know. Like, if he makes it, you know what? That would make you feel better, though. Like, if Ted Cord made an appearance, you wouldn't have anything negative to say.
After that, I would be fine. I would be at
peace. That's all it's going to take.
If they did a scene where, you know, Oliver is on the top of some building, maybe he's looking over at the Cord building. All of a sudden, and you see rising up behind him is Ted Cord standing on the back of the bug, you know, and he's just got his arms crossed. I would say, okay, Jesus, you can call me home now.
That's all Kelly wants. He's gotten Mon-El on TV. He's like, okay, come on. Why can't I have Ted Cord?
You're going to get Ted Cord. I mean, if you had told me, you know, a few years ago, hey, you know what? They're going to put Mon-El on TV. I went, you're stupid. You know, I got lucky when I got, you know, the founding members of the Legion on Smallville. Mon-El, no, that's never going to happen.
You're right.
Yeah, and here we are.
And here we are. There's Mon-El on Supergirl. Surprise! Yep. And a pretty good version of him, too, which is what's
not bad for what we've, you know, seen so far, you know.
I'll say this. I think that he's probably more compelling to Mr. Phillips than any comic book iteration has ever been.
Yeah. I would agree.
Common ground on Mon-El. There we go. We're making peace as we go along. Hey, if Kara and Mon-El can put aside differences and learn to live in harmony, so can you two. It can happen.
So does that mean that Greg's Supergirl and I'm Mon-El?
Sure. Let's run with that. But you know, you two are going to have to work out those sparks and that chemistry.
I just want to see Greg in a Supergirl costume.
We all want to see that.
We'll have to wait for next Halloween then.
Not necessarily. Fanaticon's going to come up maybe in early part of next year, and I'm going to be like, "Hey, Greg, I got an idea for your cosplay," and hey, you two can match.
Right.
And I'll be telling everyone that you got on all right at dinner.
Yeah.
God, these are things that don't need to happen. But you know what? We will roll with it if it does. And
can I say one more thing in regards to our TV?
Absolutely. I got some more on Luke Cage, actually.
Okay. I just want to quickly say Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is still, you know, keeping my interest, mainly because of the Darkhold, which they're continuing to kind of talk about and give some more background into. But I will say it's still a mediocre show. I mean, even at best.
It's graduated up to mediocre now, folks. I want you guys to mark this down, because if you remember our bottom five TV show episode, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was in there because Kelly wanted it.
Yeah, yeah, I really, really was irritated with that show, and I'm not saying that
it ain't meteoric.
It can't fall. I can't go back down to bottom, but it's keeping me interested to some extent. And like a friend of mine asked me this past week, he goes, "Why are you still watching that show?"
The question that we all want to know.
And I go, "Well, you know what? I've been with this show since the beginning, and I feel compelled. I feel compelled to stay with it, and I will until the bitter end. This isn't the first time that I have gotten myself connected to something horrible and just said, okay, I'm just going to, I'm going to sit here and just go down with the ship." People that used to listen, people that used to listen to Howard Stern would say, well, they're listening to Howard Stern because they want to hear what he's going to say next. I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in hoping that something wonderful will happen. And I mean,
basically you're like the kid on his bike, outside the Incredibles house. And Mr. Incredible comes by and says, "What are you still doing here?" He's like, "What are you waiting on?" And he's like, "I don't know, something amazing to happen."
Yeah, that's it. I'm the kid on the bike, waiting for Coulson to do something, or waiting for the show just to blow me away. But I'm waiting for maybe for a season two, part two, or version two to come out and them just to ramp it up when it was really a good show.
Well, they could do something really amazing and kill Coulson off. I'd come back for that.
Coulson's not that big of an issue to me anymore. They've got him out of the director's chair, and they've got him back in the field. This is where he needs to be. He's with Mac, and their chemistry's
Mac.
And Melinda May, she's back in there now. So I mean, it kind of feels like the old band's back together. But I mean, it's just not enough. They really, I don't know if they just need to get in, maybe definitely get some new writers in, or maybe they just need to, I don't know, find some really cool idea to. I know why. I feel the reason they're doing the magic thing this season is because of Doctor Strange.
Well,
that's what it feels like to me.
That's absolutely why they're doing it.
And
looking for that synergy between the TV show and the films that.
Right.
They're just not really going to be able to get, because let's face it, the TV side and the film side don't really get along all that well.
Yeah.
And
no.
That's also why you're probably not going to see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. characters showing up in the Marvel films. Also why you're not likely to see characters from the Netflix Defenders series showing up in the larger MCU either. I wouldn't be getting my hopes up for any of that. But speaking of Defenders, I did finally get to watch at least one more episode of Luke Cage. I watched episode 3. And again, that show just keeps getting better. Like, each episode seems to build on the excitement and the tension of the previous. And we've all seen that trailer that had him like walking through a building, being shot by all these people, walking with a car door. It happens in episode 3, and it is even better when you see it in all of its full glory. And then we also get to see the smarter side of Luke Cage, which is something I really appreciated. I like seeing them show him as somebody who's more than just, he big, he strong, brr. Okay. That's great, but there's so much more to it. And then there was a really big twist with another character in the show that immediately pissed me off, but at the same time also made a lot of sense. And I don't want to spoil it for you because I don't know how far along in the show you are.
You can go ahead. I don't mind.
Well, there may be listeners out there who still haven't watched it yet either. I don't want to, like, get into spoiler territory, but...
Understand.
That's... Yeah, Luke Cage is pretty much everything for me when it comes to Marvel TV right now. I don't really binge watch a show typically. I take my time with it, and I'm kind of glad I'm doing that because the temptation is there to just like binge watch every single episode of Luke Cage immediately. But I'm like, you know, I want to space this out. I want to really take my time with it and just absorb. I take time to absorb each episode before I just, like, jump from one to the next. But tremendous show. Everything about it has been great. And it's building my excitement for Iron Fist and for Defenders later on. But I think that about brings us to the end of television shows. And, of course, we all know that this weekend, it's Friday night when we're recording this, so Doctor Strange came out today. It's going to be about a week before I get to check it out. Kelly, you going to go see it this weekend?
I'm going to do my best to, yeah.
Okay, cool. We can talk about that. We can get your impressions of it on the next episode of Seller's Points. But since that brings us to the end of everything that you see and everything you don't, that was a horrible movie reference for all you Joel Schumacher fans out there. But that brings us to the ending portion of our first half. And when we come back, we're going to just jump right into it. We're going to tell you the top five all-time best animated comic book TV shows ever. And if that wasn't redundant enough, just come on back. We'll do it all over again, because we know how much you enjoy our deadpan and very dry humor. But we promise that the picks will be juicy, so we will see you in just a minute.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Left is from Kayfabe, titans of wrestling, tag teams back again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Get on top!
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Sellers Points Top 5 Animated Comic Book Shows Ever. And I'm here again, as you all know. Hey, Kelly.
Yes.
He's over there. Yeah, there he is. As some of you may not want to know, but during those breaks that we put in between, sometimes you need that emergency poop break. Right, Nick? Need that. Need it. It's just got to happen sometimes. And sometimes you don't have time to pause the recording. Sometimes you just got to go.
Got to go.
Exactly. But you know what? Says my plastic surgeon always said, if you got to go, go with a smile. but we didn't fudge that one. Not at all. But speaking of fudge, let's move on. Because we got some five really good TV shows to talk about. Because as you guys know, there have been plenty of good live-action adaptations lately. We're kind of in a renaissance right now of good comic book adaptations on television. Kind of a dry spell for animation, though, but back in the day... And maybe not even that long ago, in some cases, there have been some truly incredible animated shows based off of comic book properties. And Kelly and I sat down, just like we did with our top five live-action animated shows, and we had a list of nominees and some rules for consideration, which if you guys are reading the description of this episode, you will see the rules for consideration and you will see the full list of nominees that were up for consideration. Now, for those of you who didn't read that, but you want to know what the rules are, it's very simple. It's a lot like the live action lists. It's they must have had at least two seasons that aired and be based on pre-existing comic book properties and or characters. And both of us, Kelly and I, had to agree on their inclusion in the nominees, and we had to come to a consensus on the five. So this was, you know, a hashing it out, and I think this was tougher, Kelly. What about you?
Yeah, it was pretty tough. There was definitely some tough moments narrowing this list down.
That's putting it mildly, but if there's one thing that I appreciate Kelly for, it's his mastery of the subtle delivery. Mm. I haven't made him go home in a while, but I'm trying, folks. Yeah. There it is. I love pressing those ginger buttons, mostly because I know where all of them are. And I won't tell you how I discovered that, because that's a story that you folks don't need to hear. And nobody came to hear that. They came to hear us, you know, tell them what the best five animated comic book shows are of all time. And yes, we mean all time. But we're going to do you one better, folks. As we get to each of these, we're going to tell you how you can go and find them and watch them right now. Because the vast majority of them are out there on streaming services. So you don't have to wait. We're going to tell you exactly where you can find each of them as we get to them, if they are indeed available on streaming services, because unfortunately not every show is available like that. But I digress. We're gonna get right into this. So without further ado, the first entry in our top five animated comic book TV shows of all time is Spawn the Animated Series. that ran on HBO back in the late 90s. Now, this is a show that was absolutely faithful to its source, to at least the tone of its source material, where it did, you know, like most TV shows, take some liberties with characters and story. It was still incredibly well done and animated. It adapted stories straight out of the comics. It pulled characters like straight. It basically took the character design straight off the page and put them into an animated form. It mimicked that Todd McFarlane style very well. Todd was a producer and a writer on the show. He helped to develop it. It was an animated series, ran for 3 seasons on HBO. And Kelly, do you remember seeing this one?
Yes.
concise.
Yes, I do. It was like you said, it was on HBO. The short time that I had HBO, my friends and I at the time would get together and get drunk and watch this show and make fun of it.
Aww.
But, you know, with that being said, I do admire the show for, you know, looking back at it, and I admire it for the fact of Todd going to HBO or vice versa. If HBO, maybe HBO went to him, but regardless, he decided he wanted to just make his comic just like it is and not pull any punches and not be something that he would have to pull back on if he went to a normal, if he went to like the ABC or NBC or CBS or something like that, he'd have to, you know, monitor what language or violence or whatever. That's to me dedication to his work, to his character, to his creations. And I've always said, I'm not a fan of Todd McFarlane, but I've always said the man is a very good businessman when it comes to his property. And if those out there who collect figures and are a fan of figures and things like that, superhero or otherwise, you have to thank him because he reinvented the figure market.
He really did.
He basically made figures. He brought them back and made them so well that he had to have, you know, the competitors, DC, Marvel, they had to step up their game and not just put out junk. You know, they had to really start crafting their figures and their properties and make them just as good as Todd did with his product line. So, like I said, he knows what he's doing.
And that was that's another good point, that Todd McFarlane has been that influential across the board. But this show was actually pretty influential, honestly, because it showed that animated series, like comic book animated series, could be for more people than just for kids. You know, it was groundbreaking in that way. And around the same time, you also had that live-action Spawn movie that came out, which was probably one of the worst comic book adaptations ever put to screen. It was that bad. But then you go watch the animated show, and it's everything the movie should have been. Like, it's dark, it's gritty, it's got ultra-violence in it. I mean, this got some graphic violence in this show. And it even got into some pretty graphic sexual content as well. It was stuff that, I was a kid at the time seeing this for the first time, and I was like, oh my God, you know, this was shocking to me. I was like, I can't believe you can do this in animation. But the thing is, I think another thing that helped to make that series was that Keith David was voicing Spawn. And, I mean, you talk about a guy who's just got a badass voice.
Yeah.
His delivery is just over the top amazing. The dialogue in the show, I won't say is always written, you know, all that well. But, man, Keith David brings it. Like, he was committed to the role. The animation was beautiful. And unfortunately, it's another one of those shows that it ends on kind of a cliffhanger or a semi-cliffhanger in its third season. Like, you just get all these big revelations about all the things that have been happening up to this point. The show is about to move into, like, it was supposedly going to be picked up for a fourth season, and that's definitely how they wrote that ending and how they were planning for it. But you get to that last episode, and there's no more. Like, that's just it. But you can... It is done in a way, I guess, where you could fill in the blanks and say, all right, well, I kind of know how this might happen or how this might go. But it would have been nice to see that fourth season, you know, to at least, like, close it out in a proper way. Because I think they could have closed it in four seasons. But still... it was a really great show. It's one that I highly recommend any fans. Like, if you're an older fan, you're somebody who loves Spawn or whatever, and you've never seen this animated show, or even if you have seen it and it's been a little while, go back, find this show. You can watch it right now on Amazon Prime, or you can, if you've got HBO Now or HBO Go, the entire series is on all three of those streaming services right now. So you can queue that up, check it out. It is definitely worth your time. And just one of my personal favorites, and one that I actually just recently did a full rewatch of. And I loved the characterizations that they created for that show. Like from Angela, who is now actually in Marvel Comics, if you guys are familiar with Angela, Queen of Hell. She's from the now newly discovered 10th Realm. She was originally in Spawn, and she makes several appearances in this TV show. So if you want to see Angela interacting with the characters that she was originally meant to, go check out this this animated series. It's very well done. But anyway, we're going to move on to our next show. Kelly, tell the people what we got coming up next.
That would be Young Justice.
Woo!
This.
Speaking of gone too soon.
Yeah, definitely so. I was kind of late getting to this show. When I had my shop, of course, I worked, you know, long hours there, so I didn't get to see a lot of these shows when they first were out. So I kind of had to get to them later on. And this is one that I did get to a little late. But, man, if I was able to watch it on a regular basis, I would have when it first came out. You know, it's definitely the namesake. It's Young Justice. You've got... Basically, Superboy, Aqualad, Robin, Kid Flash, Miss Martian, I think. Yeah.
She's in there. She's a big part of the show.
Part of the show. Artemis.
And that version of Artemis was actually created for the TV show. She was not a prior existing character. But she is now, or at least that version of the character is now on Arrow.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you've... definitely, as the name suggests, you definitely got a young version of the Justice League to an extent. I mean, and of course they had Martian Manhunter kind of being the chaperone, kind of watches over the team.
That was a Red Tornado.
Oh, it was Red Tornado. Red Tornado.
Yeah. But Martian Manhunter is in the show, as is pretty much every member of the Justice League at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all there, and honestly, I wish they would have spun off a Justice League series from Young Justice, because they had a great voice cast.
Mm-hmm. They did. I mean, their voice cast was good. And you know, again, seeing, you know, the Red Tornado in a show like that as well, and in kind of this parental mentor kind of position was really nice. They also had like other characters show up. I know they had Zatanna.
Mm-hmm. The Jaime Reyes version of Blue Beetle in season 2.
Mm-hmm. Batgirl.
Nice. Yep, you got Batgirl, Beast Boy. You've got they even had an episode with Ran and Thanagar thrown in. Adam Strange was in an episode or in a few episodes, I think.
Lagoon Boy, which is one of those characters that kind of
talk about going to the D list.
Yeah. Guardian, Mal Duncan.
Yep.
Guardian was in the show.
You also had several different Green Lanterns up here. We had Hal and John primarily, but a mention of Guy Gardner and a simultaneous no from both Hal and John when they asked if he should be included in the league.
Yeah.
Shazam actually had a couple of episodes where he was featured fairly prominently.
Yeah.
Which I thought
Wonder
was...
Girl and Impulse also made an appearance.
Yep. Impulse. Oh, one of the best episodes of that show was when they had the Flash family all together. You had Barry, Wally, Bart, and Jay Garrick. Like, all of them running together even. And it was... It was, if you're a Flash fan, it was one of those moments that'll just melt your heart. You know, it was a perfectly done episode of that show, of which there were many. And
it's unfortunate cancelization was a big stink too. I think a lot of fans and stood up and was wanting this show to be renewed.
And there's still that push for it online. There's a big push on the in the online community to get Netflix to pick the show up. And that is in fact where you can stream the two seasons of Young Justice that are available. And I will say that I think that while the first season is really good, I think the second season is really where it's at, because they allow Robin to grow up. He becomes Nightwing. And they have a new Robin in Tim Drake, who winds up joining the team a little bit later.
I want to say also that it won a few Emmys.
I don't know if it won any Emmys or not. I don't know if it got awards.
Daytime Emmy Awards for Outstanding Sound Mixing and Animation. 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay. That is really great. And that's, I would say, deservedly so. It was... It had a very distinct opening little bit of music, even though it doesn't last very long. It's very quick. But still, you have this amazing show that took all those young DC characters and gave them a platform that was beyond anything that they had up to this point. And in a show that was done so well and so entertainingly written, drawn, just for me, I look at Young Justice and I was like, this is a show that could easily make somebody into a DC Comics fan. But if they've never seen DC Comics anything before, they watch this, I think this will turn you. You walk out of there, you may not be a huge DC fan afterwards, but you'll walk out of there saying, okay, DC's got some stuff that I'm interested in. I want to find out more about these characters. It certainly made me appreciate Calderon, who was the version of Aqualad they went with. It made me appreciate him more. And there were even a couple of episodes with Tempest, or Garth, if you will. He did appear very briefly on the show. You know, you longtime fans out there will know that he was the original Aqualad. So this show was very plugged into the idea of legacy. You know, another character who was really big in the show was Roy Harper. His story arc was a major plot point from the first season through the second season, even. I'm like, there's so much there to love for fans of any era, any DC era. I think that Young Justice is something that everybody, if you're a DC fan or even if you're just a fan of good animated shows, you need to go check that out. And like we said, it's on Netflix. So if you got that, you can go stream it all right now. I highly recommend you do. Next up is a seminal classic. I think that anybody who has ever watched any animated shows ever that are based on comic books anyway knows about this one. It's a big one. It would be X-Men, the animated series from the 1990s. So, you want to talk about a show that just hit all those beats perfectly and just struck right at the right time. Because there was a new X-Men number one. There was a new X-Men comic out there that was by Chris Claremont and Jim Lee. And this show used those characters and those designs and started adapting some classic X-Men stories to the small screen. And what was, I think it was my first time watching a show that had episodic storytelling. As in, each episode led to the next one. It was just one long story. It was a bit soap opera-esque at times. And to this day, we just cannot get enough of quoting certain Professor X lines. I'm going to leave that to the expert voice imitator himself, Mr. Phillips. I humbly request that you grace us with your Professor Xavier impression on the next Hard Traveling Fanboys, if that is a possibility, because we all want to hear it. That or your Cyclops impression, just to give Tim Capel a thrill. But Kelly, what did you think of X-Men the Animated Series? I know you were probably watching it at the same time I was.
Yeah. Definitely was happy to see the X-Men on the small screen and see them in an episodic series where, like you said, it kind of followed itself and was nice for a change to have a show that was like that. And the fact that, they pulled right from the comics as far as characters and designs. They didn't, if I remember right, they didn't do a whole lot of changing things or altering things from the comic to the cartoon show. I will say the only thing that really kind of, even at the time, this was not just now, but I mean, even then, I wasn't a fan of the animation to an extent. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't, was it horrible? You know, it wasn't bad. I just felt with, when you look at, Pride of the X-Men for that,
oh God,
the best thing about Pride of the X-Men was the animation. It was very sharp. It was very crisp. It was very, it was just really good. I would have loved to have seen that animation style with the animated series for X-Men. That's the only thing good about Pride of the X-Men. That's all I'm going to say about that.
That's the only thing left to say about it other than, yeah. Oi, there was an Aussie Wolverine.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible, almost as terrible as my attempt at an Aussie accent. But what I appreciated, though, most about X-Men the Animated Series is that it was not, like we were saying, it's not afraid to just reach right into the comic source material and say, hey, here's a good story. Let's turn that into an animated version. I mean, they did God Loves, Man Kills. They did Days of Future Past. And, of course, they did the absolutely epic Phoenix and Dark Phoenix sagas. They did both of them.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you want to talk about a series that had some balls. It did not shy away from it, and yeah, it was written dialogue-wise a lot like a soap opera, but to this day, any kid that grew up with X-Men animated series definitely hears the voice of the guy who voiced Wolverine in their head anytime they read him in a comic now.
Yeah.
You can't help it. That guy's voice is iconic. I associate him with Wolverine now and until forever. You know, no offense to Hugh Jackman, who's done great, but in my mind, that guy from the animated series will always be Wolverine. Mm-hmm. They didn't put Nightcrawler on the team immediately. They had Morph, who was a character who was created for the series, not a pre-existing character. But, man, as a kid, it was kind of shocking to see him, spoiler alert, killed in the first episode.
Yeah.
Or seemingly killed in the first episode. You don't see – that took me back, man. I was a, you know, fairly young kid at the time, but was totally in on this show. But, you know, in my mind, even at that young, I was like, there's certain rules here. I mean, the danger level is only so much. You know, it's not like they're going to – you know, really kill off a character or something like, oh my God, they did. And it was an emotionally racking moment. And when you get to the end of the episode, he's still dead. You're like, oh, they really meant it.
Yeah.
Of course they bring him back, you know, spoiler alert later. But they did it. They actually did it really well. I loved how they did that, how they did, especially Mr. Sinister. Even the Savage Land stuff, which is an X-Men concept that I've never really been high on, I thought that the Savage Land was done really well in the animated series. For me, it was done better in the animated series than it ever was in the comics. But again, if you're looking for that really good adaptation of X-Men, and maybe the X-Men movies haven't done it for you, I really think this would be your show. Because they basically took the Claremont Jim Lee era, took it right off the comic book page and plastered it onto our television screens every Saturday morning on Fox. And it was the last time that Fox and Marvel were really getting along, I think.
Yeah.
They get along fine. They're all making money off these X-Men movies. It's just, you know, we all know that Disney wants the X-Men back so they can put them in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of which, that's actually a good segue to our next show, Kelly, because I think our next show is actually in a lot of people's minds. Oh, but we didn't. We didn't say where you can watch X-Men the Animated Series. If you really want to go watch that show right now, the entire series, all five seasons, yes, five seasons of that show are on Hulu. You can watch every single episode of it right now. But as I was saying, we may not get the X-Men in the MCU, but there is a Disney-produced Marvel show that shows us what that might be like had all those properties that Fox has the film rights to suddenly be integrated into the larger MCU. And Kelly, tell us what that show is.
That's Avengers: Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
You got that right.
Two seasons. I remember back when you lived here, some of us came over and watched several episodes over at your place, and this was the first time that I got to see it. Again, kind of like with Young Justice, just, you know, by the time I would get home, a lot of these shows were either off or, but I mean, the animation, the stories, the characters, I mean, they just nailed it. They put, you know, the Avengers on TV, and they did it right. They animated show. They nailed it. Captain America, Hawkeye, Miss Marvel, Jarvis, Iron Man, Black Panther, Wasp, Hulk, Thor, Ant Man, Giant Man, Yellow Jacket. You know, you had everybody, and they were always bringing in, you know, other characters from the Marvel universe, either as a guest star or whatever, you know.
They had everybody on this show at some point.
Yeah.
It was the Marvel Universe in a television show, including the X-Men.
And Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, Guardians of the Galaxy was absolutely on this show. And I think another thing that this show did right was it was taking stories, again, like X-Men the Animated Series, it took stories straight out of the comics.
Yeah.
And in one case, in particular, did it better.
Oh, yeah.
Secret Invasion.
Yep.
Done so much better by Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes than it ever was in the comics. But, guys, if you ever wanted to see what the MCU could be if they got to include the X-Men and the Fantastic Four, and especially the Fantastic Four's villains, Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes is what the MCU should look like. And I think another thing that helped the show along was they had I had a few comic book writers coming on to write episodes of the show.
Mm-hmm.
One guy who made who wrote a lot of episodes of this show was Christopher Yost, writing several episodes from 2010 through 2012. He wrote like 23 episodes of this show, more than any other writer. And it was really his vision that helped to make this show what it was. And I think that was another big reason for its success, despite the fact that it only had, unfortunately, two seasons. And I felt like they gave it a better ending, though, because at least they knew that their show was coming to an end. And they were able to kind of hammer out those last bits and say, okay, well, we're going to wrap this up, but we're going to actually stamp an ending on it. It did move a little fast there at the end, but it was still a tremendously written and animated show, which, unfortunately, the Marvel animated shows since have not really been able to recreate the magic of. But still a great series. And unfortunately, you can't stream it anywhere. Which is incredibly disappointing. But you can get a pretty good deal on the Blu-rays on Amazon right now. You can get them both seasons for $34.58. So, Kelly, anything else you want to add about Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes?
No, I think we pretty much covered it.
Yeah, we've... again, folks, sorry about the technical difficulties there. Sometimes things just...
happens.
Yeah, sometimes things just fall apart, and we have to scramble to put them back together with duct tape. And that's kind of how this one feels. But moving on from that, I know some of you have been sitting there at home like, wait a minute, that's four shows and not one mention of the incredible and illustrious Bruce Timm. You know, what about Batman the Animated Series? What about Superman the Animated Series? By God, what about Justice League and Justice League Unlimited? Well, we talked about that, and we decided that all of those shows, if we had included them as one, as individuals, they would have taken up pretty much the entire list. And we wouldn't have gotten to some of these other, like, really great shows that were, like, more than deserving of being included. Then we thought about it a little further. Those shows all interconnect. So the Bruce Timm universe is essentially one gigantic show. So we decided that, for that sake, we were going to just include them all as one entry into the list. And it is our final entry on the top five animated comic book TV shows of all time. And that is the Bruce Timm universe, which encompasses Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, Batman Beyond, and even Static Shock, if you want to if you want to get technical and include everything about it. And honestly, just about every bit of praise for this show has already been said, but it bears repeating. And I think that it's safe to call this the greatest adaptation of any comic book character ever put to screen, be it large or small. This is the show that defined DC Comics in the minds of multiple generations of people, and not just kids. Though kids were the primary audience, this show, or these series of shows, set the tone for what a lot of people think of when they think of DC Comics. Be it Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Aquaman, the younger heroes like Robin, Nightwing, even Batgirl, and especially the DC villains, notably Joker, Darkseid, voiced incomparably by Mark Hamill and Michael Ironside, respectively. And, of course, the voice of Batman, Kevin Conroy himself, who is pretty much what I think most would consider the definitive Batman. So, that said, Kelly, what kind of impression did the Bruce Timm universe make on you whenever you first saw it?
I pretty much was a fan from, you know, the first episode and every, you know, every show. I mean, Batman the Animated Series was, you know, the first, I believe, and that kind of set the stage for everything else that kind of came after. It's just quality work. I mean, from music, writing, you know, the animation style was all pretty much kind of the same, and they didn't kind of, you know, if it wasn't broke, they didn't try to fix it. I mean, they just kind of, they had a good thing, and they knew how to make it work. I think some of the standout episodes for me were the ones where you were seeing other characters that you normally wouldn't see at all in an animated series pop up in mainly the Justice League series. The one episode I think my favorite episode of all is the one where I think it was General Talbot or one of the characters ends up, this guy really has a hate on for superheroes, so he injects himself with some Cadmus something and hulks out, and they're having this celebration parade for the Justice League. And, of course, the Justice League, the main cast is all off-world doing something, so they kind of send down the B and C-listers to stand in their place. And you have characters like Vigilante and Shining Knight.
Stargirl was in that episode.
Stargirl, Crimson Avenger. You know, characters like that, Green Arrow and Speedy. Basically what you would call the Seven Soldiers of Victory. That was a group, an old DC group from back in the day. Because you also had Stars and Stripes, or Stargirl.
Yeah, you had Stargirl and you had Stripe, who was...
Yep.
These were Geoff Johns' creations as well.
Mm-hmm. But that was my favorite episode because I just kind of was like seeing these characters on the small screen like that. I mean, there's, you know, and voice acting, and you had Nathan Fillion voicing Vigilante, which was just, you know, I think the first time I heard him do he was doing voice work. So, but overall, just the quality of the Timverse and like I said, the storytelling. And everything was just always spot on. I can't think of a time where I was like, "Oh, this is horrible," or "That was horrible." You know, everything was just—they just knew how to do it. I mean, even though they weren't doing that great on the big screen at the time, putting out movies and so forth, they were killing it in animation, and still do. I think they, you know, Marvel has not even come close to. The kind of work that they did animated-wise that DC has.
I would agree with that statement. I would say that Marvel's had some good shows out there, but as far as like an interconnected animated universe, these DC shows have got it over them just big time. Like you've got... you know, the definitive take, I think it's a definitive take on Batman with the original Batman, the Animated Series, which it owes a lot to the Tim Burton Batman films that came out in the late 80s and the early 90s, because it even used that Danny Elfman score as its opening theme. Like, it very much tried to position itself as that, but then... like a lot of these other these animated shows we've talked about, it adapted its stories almost directly from stories that had appeared in comic books. But these shows, specifically Batman the Animated Series, contributed big time to the larger comic book pantheon because it gave us... a character that has now become DC's second biggest selling character, second most popular character next to Batman himself, in Harley Quinn, who first appeared in Batman the Animated Series.
Yep.
So that is that's a huge contribution from this series of shows to that. It also it gave us a new take on Batman as well. It gave us I don't want to say it was maligned necessarily, because it definitely wasn't, because it had an entire generation of fans who were like really into Batman Beyond, you know, a future version of Batman, or who was not really Bruce Wayne. It was Terry McGinnis, a character in the far future. You see old man Bruce Wayne, who can no longer be Batman. You get to see like what the future of the world looks like, and it's both bright, shiny, and yet still kind of bleak. So it's a world that still needs a Batman. And at first, you know, I'll say that I wasn't on board with the concept. I know it was one that rubbed some other Batman fans the wrong way, too. But as it goes along, it gets really good. And it turned out to be a pretty fantastic show that even had a spinoff movie that was really good, too, called Batman Beyond: The Return of the Joker.
Yeah.
Really, really good stuff all the way through. But I think that the real moment for Batman Beyond, at least in my mind, came in what was originally planned as the series finale of Justice League Unlimited, in an episode called Epilogue, when we see Terry McGinnis in the future. He's older, he's way more jacked, like he's gotten in way better shape, he's been Batman for years, and he finds out, or at least he has a DNA test that shows that Bruce, or at least it comes back that Bruce was his father. And it tripped him out. So he goes and finds the one person who could give him answers on it, since Bruce wouldn't tell him. He hunts down an old lady, Amanda Waller. And she tells him the whole story of how this whole thing was actually a project they called Batman Beyond. And that in one of the series' most subtle sex jokes ever, and yet, and also one of its funniest, was when she tells Terry that they had developed a program to overwrite DNA so that she could create a new little Bruce from his exact genes. But since he had no children, she had to make one himself. But that meant that she had to get his DNA, which was easy enough because he left it all over town. And then she cuts off the joke. She cuts off her dialogue right there to look at Terry and say, "That's not remotely what I meant." And of course, I was dying. I was like, "Oh God, that's good." But of course, it was one of the most well-written, well-voice-acted episodes of any show ever. It gave me newfound respect for Batman Beyond, for the idea of Batman Beyond, so much so that I am legitimately a fan now. I'm even reading the Batman Beyond comic because it's really good. It's very entertaining. And that is all owed to the mind of an animation style and production savvy of Mr. Bruce Timm. Now, that's going to bring us to where can you find these shows? Where if you want to go watch these shows right now, because you know you do, even if you're somebody who's seen every episode of these shows, they're worth revisiting any time. And we're in luck because the vast majority of these shows are on streaming services right now. If you want to watch Batman, the animated series, and the vastly underrated and just incredible Superman, the animated series, you can find both of them in their entirety on Amazon Prime right now. You can stream both series fully. Highly recommend you do. Highly recommend you check out Superman, which is also where they originally introduced the Kyle Rayner Green Lantern and Sinestro. They also introduced, of course, Lex Luthor, who is a big part of that show and would go on to be a big part of Justice League and JLU. You also get the Wally West Flash, who was voiced by Michael Rosenbaum, who played Lex Luthor on Smallville. We have, who else is on the show? Oh, you also get introduced to Aquaman, who would also wind up to go on and be introduced in, or be a player in, Justice League and JLU. There's also an appearance from Dr. Fate and Darkseid. Darkseid is actually a big part of the Superman animated series. So lots of big threads happen in that show, including the Brainiac story that happened, the big Brainiac epic that happens in Justice League Unlimited actually starts in Superman the Animated Series. And that's another great thing about this universe, is that these shows will call back to episodes of other of their other shows and say, hey, remember this? It's an interconnected continuity that shows that it is just one giant show. And it is easily the most comprehensive look at the DC universe that has ever been put to animation. So that alone earns it a spot in the top five, but the fact that it is done so incredibly well from beginning to end means in my mind that it is the absolute greatest animated shows of all time. So,
yeah.
And with that, that's the list. That's our five, the greatest comic book animated shows of all time. Now, we do have a few that just missed, didn't quite get on a list, and for various reasons. I know that my couple of honorable mentions didn't get on the list because they weren't eligible, and that's unfortunate, you know, because a couple of these shows, well, one of my shows is not eligible. The other show we just said because Spider-Man appeared in Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, so I didn't put it on there, but I got to give it up. An honorable mention goes to The Spectacular Spider-Man, which is a show that ran on Disney XD and was a better adaptation of Ultimate Spider-Man than the current Ultimate Spider-Man show could ever hope to be. Great animation, amazing take on that character, and again, adapted stories straight out of the comic, especially straight out of the Ultimate comics. So if you've read that and you've never watched Spectacular Spider-Man, you definitely need to go get it on Blu-ray. Well worth the price of it, which is actually not that high. Kelly, what was one of your honorable mentions? I know you had a couple.
The Tick.
That was a good one.
I did not, when I first saw this show, I didn't realize that it was a comic. It was one of those ones that I kind of, a buddy of mine eventually told me it was based on a comic, but I saw it, fell in love with it. Pretty much it's like taking the comic and putting it right on the, you know, right on the small screen. It's funny, you know, it does a lot of poking fun at the hero genre, and you have characters like the Fluttermouse and American Maid. Tick's, you know, sidekick is this accountant who has like a moth suit. it's really, you know, just fun. It's a fun show.
Yeah, it's. I remember that show also on Fox Kids around the same time as X-Men and Spider-Man animated series, respectively. It was a fun show. Definitely played for laughs. Really good comedy. It embraced fully the silliness of the character and the satirical nature of the show too, to make fun of superheroes. My other honorable mention goes to a series that was not eligible for consideration because it only had one season, and that is Green Lantern, the animated series. Also done by Bruce Timm's production house, though it was computer generated rather than hand-drawn. And it was everything that the movie should have been. Captured the character of Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner, very well. It also gave us a really good take on Sinestro, introduced a pretty compelling take on the Red Lanterns, even gave us Larfleeze and the Blue Lantern Corps. It pretty much hit like all the beats and was setting up like this just incredible story go that could have been something in a second season, but of course we will never have that, which is just heartbreaking to this this Green Lantern fan. But it definitely deserved to be mentioned because it was done so incredibly well. And Kelly, what was your last honorable mention?
Batman Brave and the Bold. Another really good show, ran for a few seasons, and again, you know, just did some serious and funny stuff at the same time. I mean, it was always had a really unique cast of characters to ride along with Batman, you know, and you know, like Dr. Fate, Red Tornado, Bawana Beast. You know,
there's one you didn't expect to see.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely had a campiness to it that didn't hurt it. You know, it felt real, it felt right. And another show just like The Tick, it was just fun to watch. You know, you just enjoyed the ride. It was just like I said, it was a good show.
And it's also gave us a take on Aquaman that many people seem to love.
By far, probably one of the best versions of Aquaman.
Yes, it is indeed memorable and incredibly hilarious. So, if you guys, if you want
a chance, check it out.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. If you want to check out Batman: The Brave and the Bold, it is out there, easy to find. I think The Tick is on Netflix as well. Unfortunately, both of my honorable mentions are not available for streaming, so you'll just have to like Blu-ray those, but well worth the price. Do it. Go to Amazon. Go to whatever retailer it is you choose and get you Spectacular Spider-Man and Green Lantern, the animated series. But with that, folks, that brings us to the end of another edition of the Sellers Points podcast. Before we go, we want to tell you about what we got coming up. Because we got a couple things coming up that you're going to be interested in. Of course, the next part of this month's episodes is going to be our bottom five. That's right. We're going to take a look at the animated series that suck. And we're going to pick out the five worst. Is that where the controversy is going to be? I don't know. It could be. You'll have to come.
Is there an animated Gotham series that you can make Miranda mad about?
Oh, I think we'll be making. I think we'll find a way to make her mad.
Sorry, Miranda. I'm not trying to instigate anything. I was just.
Oh, I am. Hashtag Gotham sucks. And, I got no chill. None. Zero.
Savage. So savage.
I am just salty all day. But anyway, that will be our next episode. And then coming up in our first December episode, we're going to be joined by that hard-traveling fanboy, your favorite and mine, Mr. Greg Phillips, is going to be here for our guide to Superman. And we will be closing out the year in the month of December with a brand new episode of The Mist and the Maligned, where we are taking a look at the 2009 film adaptation of Watchmen, directed by the ever-controversial Zack Snyder. And we might just have a special guest joining us for that one. Stay tuned. You guys will definitely be hearing about that once we get those plans fully finalized. But again, thank you for joining us on this episode. We apologize for our technical difficulties. We'll try to get our shit together for the next one. And for Kelly Poole, everybody's favorite Gingerberry White, and me, Russell Sellers, thank you guys again for joining us. And don't forget to go and check out all the other great podcasts right here on Place to Be Nation Pop. That would be Geek and Sassy, The Hard Traveling Fanboys, Imaginary Stories, Todd Weber's Imagination Comics, The Lucha Undead, the just plethora of shows out there, the Glenn Butler podcast Spectacular. I know I'm forgetting somebody, and I apologize, but there are tons and tons of great content out there for you guys to go and get. So don't miss any of it. And guys, We will see you next time.
See ya.